Good morning, everybody. This is Judith Echo. You're listening to My Love. Let's get into it. Coming in a little exhausted, not gonna lie. We had a very terrible caregiving weekend. I think I explained on last week, on like Thursday or Friday, like my mom was throwing up blood, you know, small amounts of blood, turns out. And then it got so bad on Friday night about 8:30. I was like, this just isn't right. Nobody should be having a dental issue that causes this much blood. It was just, you know, a lot. And so I called hospice and they sent a nurse out and they kind of grilled me more about the earlier throw up and the coffee grounds and all that. And they're like, this is classic ulcer. You know, she's got an upper GI bleed and it's coming out. So don't worry. It should start to, you know, be less and less. And I was like, okay. But I didn't realize that that meant all day Saturday I would be catching bloody throw up, if you will, blood clots in a trash can. And I know my mom was hurting because she prefers to not throw up in the trash can, but it was so much blood and it was like almost all day. And I didn't get very much done and it was just like kind of distressing. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching this and I know she's not feeling well, but you know, I spent most of the day at her bedside doing that. And then we move into the evening hours and it just got crazy. Like she had me take her to the bathroom. There's something with her in the bathroom and she won't use it. So we'll walk all the way there and then she'll just be like, no thanks. And then it's like, but ma'am, we just walked all this way. If you have to use the bathroom, we're in the bathroom. And she won't go. And so I noticed that she needed to change her Depends. So I took it off and we were walking. Like, we do this every night. And at least once or twice during the day when I'm caregiving for her. And so it was just routine. We were walking back. And then she stopped and sat on the wrong part of the bed. I was like, that is not where I asked you to sit. And then she falls back into this convulsion. Her arms and legs are moving seemingly involuntarily. It was very bizarre. It was hard to watch. And I was like, oh my God, what's happening? And then she moved to the edge of the bed and tried to stand up. I was like, what's happening? Can I help you? And then she collapsed on the floor. Complete collapse. Like, eyes rolled back in her head. I thought she had died. She fell on the floor. I thought she was dying or dead. She was glassy-eyed, eyes up in her head. I didn't know what was going on. And then I looked behind her, and it's just this giant black turd. Just giant. And I'm not trying to humiliate my mom at all. This is just what happened. And it was terrifying. I was just scared beyond belief. I called hospice. I called my sister. I'm screaming in the phone. I'm like, oh my God, what, you know. I called a neighbor. She was great. She's a nurse. Eventually my mom came back too, and I just could not get her up. I couldn't get her up. So my neighbor gets there, hoists her up by herself, puts her back on the bed. We prepare the bed with a ton of bed pads. We clean her up. I clean up as much as I can off the floor. And after all that, and then hospice comes out and they're like, we're pretty sure this is a result of the bleeding ulcer that's breaking up. Because she was spitting up like a little soft tissue. It was just a lot. It was a lot. And I had Googled all this, so I wasn't as scared. But I was looking like nobody said anything about this. So it must hurt extraordinarily bad to go number two with an ulcer. So she just was laid out. But then by the time, you know, hospice got there, checked her out, she was exhausted. And she slept fine. And I sat there and watched her for a long time, and I thought, man, if she makes it through tonight, she'll make it. You know, she's not going to the light, because that's as close as I've seen her to really giving up the ghost. Like, that was scary. And then she made it, like, you know, and Sunday was less eventful. Not a lot of Alzheimer's through this, guys. That's what's really fascinating. She knows who I am. I'm telling her stories. We're laughing. It's weird. She tells me how much she loves me and, you know, just very complimentary, very affectionate. It's very nice. All of that ended last night. Because she just, she became an Alzheimer's patient again. And just irrational and screaming and yelling. And, you know, we walk to the bathroom. She doesn't use the bathroom. She starts screaming. She's terrified of the bathroom. I'm like, but you had us walk all the way down here. She won't go in the bathroom. It was insane. So I was up for a good chunk of last night just trying to calm her down. And I know that she's in pain, and I can't have her walking around like that, you know. So it's just a wild scenario. And then, you know, my caregiver, she's got that fire, and she's great, and I love working with her. But you can tell, like, she just believes everybody should recover, period. You know, like, I don't care that she's 87. I don't care. But she's never there with me all night with her. And I'm sure she, and like I said, you know, I know she has her difficulties with her too, but it's a shorter amount of time than I do. And like, my mom can be a terrorist at night. Like, she can just go all for hours, just all hyped up and irrational and trying to hit you with things. And, you know, it's like, all I'm trying to do is put a little depends on you, you know, and she's just like demonic about not putting that thing on. And it's crazy. She just acts like she's possessed by something. And then, you know, it becomes Alzheimer's because she doesn't remember me. So she's like, get this man off of me. Tell this man. And it's like, who do you think I am? And what do you think is happening to you? So we did that last night. And I was like, oh, welcome back, Alzheimer's, because this has not been something I've dealt with since probably Friday, because she was in so much pain and it was kind of sobering for her, you know. And then by Saturday, it was something totally different. I think that, I don't know if she remembered it, but it was scary. Scary enough for both of us to be like, what the hell? What was that? So that was my weekend. And then yesterday, the caregiver came, and she was only there for a few hours. I tried to get some work done. It's just crazy. Like, this thing is just taking over my life right now. And I know people are worried about me and all. And I get that. But I stand by what I'm doing, because in my mind, it's, you know, people are like, you're an angel and you've earned your wings and you're, what else do people say all the time? Like, multiple people say that. Oh, you're amazing. Oh, you're a superstar. Oh, you're, and it's like, I'm not any of those things. I am just the daughter my father raised. He was very serious about taking care of your mother. And so I will prove that to you, because my dad and my mom had kids from previous marriages. I'm their only child together. And my oldest brother, my dad's firstborn son, just buried his mom last year after taking care of her in the home, in a hospital bed. You know what I mean? Like, that's just how he raised us. He instilled that in all of his kids. And we clearly listened. He has a younger brother that helped him. And, you know, I'm very dedicated to taking care of my mom. And I know that it doesn't look like, I just couldn't explain to people, like, this is not what it's been like. She's only had Alzheimer's. This bleeding and not being able to walk and all this other stuff is really new to last week. But that's the other part of it, guys. Like, things can come up, things can start to happen. And that person, You know, never do they, not never, but rarely do they say a person died from Alzheimer's. It's always complications due to Alzheimer's or, you know, a heart attack or a stroke. And, you know, they let you know that this person also had Alzheimer's. But, you know, it's usually a complication. And like I said, my caregiver is like, oh, she's going to be all right. Oh, we're going to. And I'm like, it's really up to God. You know, I'm not going to rush her or hasten her demise, but, you know, she's in hospice and it's the closest thing that we have to a merciful exit. And there, you know, there comes a time when people have to leave and everybody's not spiritually aware enough to hit the exit button on their own. You know, there are a lot of people like we're so precious and attached to this life. And I'm not exactly sure why. I'm not suicidal. I don't have suicidal ideation. I just don't understand. This life is hard. It's brutal in a lot of ways, and I'm not so sure what we're attached to. And I get the idea why somebody came up with the concept of heaven, because otherwise you wouldn't keep going. This is hard, and you have to do hard things. And then we live in a society where nobody wants to teach you how to do hard things, because if you become good at that, then you may figure out, well, I don't have to just be a factory worker or somebody who works for another person. I can do hard things. And then you start thinking you can, you know, rage against the machine. So, not that I'm cynical, but I'm a little cynical. I'm not superstitious, but I'm a little stitious. That's courtesy of Michael Gary Scott from The Office. I'm a little stitious. Anyway, next topic. I'm fine. Everything's going to be good. I'm going to get more help. I have to have more help. Ideally, it would be nice to have. This is what I really would love is 24-hour care for my mom in her home where I don't have to be a part of it at all. And somehow that just has to become the reality. It'll be super expensive, but I do think that's going to guarantee you the best level of care. Sorry, guys. I had to blow my nose. It was just driving me crazy. And that sounded gross. I'm not editing it out, so sorry. My whole body hurts. I was wrestling with her last night. She's strong. That's the other thing. You know, when people see my mom, like, she's so frail in these moments. But, man, she gives you the business. She wants to fight. She scratches, tries to throw shit at you, punches you. It's crazy. Anyway, so I'm fine. Things are fine. You know, if you want a plan, I think you should figure out how to set up a home health network for your loved one where care comes into their home. And they don't have to be in the home they're in now. You can lease them an apartment and set up the services that you need to come in there and do what needs to be done. I've chosen to live with my mom because she always seems like she thinks she's so independent, but she never really was, to be honest. And she always required some help, and I, you know, never minded really helping her. But, you know, this is a whole nother level. So don't get caught unprepared like my family. Be ready to, you know, start a little business for your family and put shifts in place and draft people, young folks. You do the night shift, older people, you bring food by after work, you know, just get a routine and hunker down, because this is going to be real. It's already millions of families that do this, and there's going to be probably three times as many millions of families that are going to have to do this in the next 5 to 10 years. And I don't know. Our society is not set up to support those people. Our society is not set up to reward those people. I was talking to a friend of mine who really gets what I'm saying when I say, stop telling people there's so many resources out here. There's not any resources. Even you, once you talk to multiple social workers, there is a very strong limit on what people can offer you. When I hear resources, I think, oh, you have some place that offers free healthcare or free home health or free, you know, I could put my mom in this facility and they pay for half of it on scholarship or something. You know what I mean? There's no resources out there like that. And there's no bodies to come in there to help you. There's nobody that sends free caregivers to your house for 24 hours a day. Yeah, so don't tell me about resources. There's a whole bunch of places that you can get on the phone and call yourself and find out. So there's not all these resources. It's a myth. I'll even say it's a lie, because it is. Moving on to the next topic. I said I was doing that a while ago, and I didn't. If you have HBO or the ID channel, which now I guess the ID channel is part of HBO Max, check out the docuseries Quiet on Set. It's all about how deeply, deeply broken Nickelodeon was during its big heyday. Like, it produced a ton of stars, but the company was full of, it employed a ton of pedophiles, and there were lots of really inappropriate relationships between grown-ups and the kids of these shows. They became stars. And I'll be honest, I never knew what Amanda Bynes looked like. I was grown when these shows were popular. And I mean really grown, like 30. And I remember watching Nickelodeon with my nephew in the 90s, but not in the 2000s. By the time we started getting to Amanda Bynes, I hadn't had any reason to watch Nickelodeon. And I only know what she looks like now. So when I saw her, I was startled, because I can't believe that's the same girl. What kind of trauma did she go through? This was a cute, vibrant, spirited, talented young lady. And when you look at her now, she looks like her soul has been sucked out of her body. What have they done to these people? You know, it's like, what are people sacrificing to be in Hollywood and have these careers? Because I can't tell. I see why people like on TikTok are so loyal to her, and they're very encouraging. They're like, great job, Amanda, because she posts. And when she talks, she sounds like she's kind of slow. And this was a vibrant, funny girl, right? When you watch the videos of her auditioning, she did stand up. She was just a fun, cute kid. And now she is a shell of that. She's got a face tattoo. Her hair is really blonde and harsh. Her eyes are dead. And it's like, what happened to this kid? And then last night's, I think it's over now. It was 4 episodes. You should be able to see all 4 on HBO. One kid, I didn't realize I knew this kid. He was the little boy in Jerry Maguire, not the little blonde kid, but the kid whose dad got like hammered in hockey or something, and he had all these concussions. And there was a little boy who was basically begging Jerry Maguire to talk his dad out of playing some more. And he just, you know, being Jerry Maguire, he refused. And this kid was like, yeah, fuck you, and flips him off. That's Drake Bell. Little redheaded kid, cute kid. And I remember his face in that movie, because that's one of my favorite movies. And so he was a cute kid. He grew up, he got on Nickelodeon. And I'm telling you, this man that went after him, he is a textbook predator, manipulator. These people are out here, they're waiting to groom your kids and silo them and get them to themselves so they can have all kinds of inappropriate sex with them and torment them and really have them manipulated and having weird relationships with them because they're in love with your kid. And I'm going to say this loud for everybody in the cheap seats. There is never, ever, ever a time that a grown person, especially a grown person without kids, is interested in spending time with your kid just because. You know, I know people say that was Michael Jackson, and maybe, I don't know. It turns out his latest accusers have confessed that they made it up, but I think they were brainwashed. Because it is weird for a grown person to want to be around little kids, you know? It's strange. never ever is it normal. I would say it's even weird if it's Michael Jackson. But it's definitely a motive. There's rare a person, I would say 99.9% of people just want to harm your kid. And I'm not talking about, oh, hang out once in a while, or oh, they really are your tutor, or oh, they really are giving you advice, or they really are trying to help you do something. I'm talking about when they want to spend time with your kid, they make sure that the parents aren't around, they don't have any kids, or some I'm talking about the male on male, the grown male seducing the child, really grooming them and manipulating them. But I've also seen grown men, and they have children and girlfriends and wives, and they decide that they need to take their mentorship with a 14-year-old girl to the next level. And they start spending all this time and money on little kids. Like, that's just wrong. There's no 40-year-old man that has anything to do with a 14-year-old girl that's not sexually perverted. Just know that. That's never, ever. These men don't want to spend time with their own kids. You know? Why would they want to spend time with your child? It doesn't make sense. And, you know, when you hear how he breaks down how this guy's played the long game, I mean, he was really patient and manipulative, and did some really horrific things to this boy who's now a man who can't even say the things that the man did to him. They show it in the court documents. It's horrible. Horrible. How many of us have been entertained at the expense of someone that we cared about and was invested in, and they were, you know, getting attacked and raped and, you know, it's sexually assaulted, and they were underage, and, you know, emotionally, you just cannot ever be prepared. You know, 14, 15-year-old person is going to rationally give themselves advice on how to handle it or get out of it. You know, they don't know what to do. And they don't want to tell anybody, because they really, especially child stars, I mean, they're the ones that are the primary breadwinner. So they feel like this whole situation comes to a halt. That kind of pressure, man, quiet on set. It's very well done. It's very disturbing. And I'm telling you, when you see, if you're from like me and you're not familiar with who Amanda Bynes really was in her heyday, when you look at her picture on this docuseries and then you Google what she looks like now, it's terrifying. Like, absolutely terrifying. It's almost like it's not the same person. And I don't know what these people are out here doing, but I think this is just the beginning of letting you know that Hollywood is one giant pedophile ring. And there are different theories as to what all these people are doing with these children, but there are a large number of them who are just having old-fashioned rape with the kids, because that's what they're into. And what better way to hide in plain sight than to pretend like you're, you know, helping kids with, what was it, accents or speeches or something. He was their speech coach or something crazy, dialogue coach. But, you know, he had an extensive network of friends, and I'm sure they're also pedophiles. Sorry. You know, I don't have any friends that are pedophiles. They wouldn't want to be friends with me, because I would have them completely in prison and prosecuted to the fullest extent. Sorry, got a phone call. But true, I would prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law. You got to be careful who you surround yourself with. Pay attention. Everybody who's trying to do something is not a friend. There are some nefarious people out here who wake up with the intention of causing harm to people, and they manipulate people and they're expert at it. They've been doing this for years. Quiet on Set, very good. I recommend it. Please enjoy it. I'm super pumped for the Pittsburgh Steelers. They've made some great moves. Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, that's going to be a great QB room. And not only for Justin as a quarterback, but as a person. People give Russell Simmons is in trouble. He's never coming back to America. They give Russell Wilson a hard time, but he's a good person. And, you know, they think he's corny because he loves his wife and kids. I don't know why that's the case, but I'm here for it. Anyway, excuse me. I'm obviously in demand, so I got to return this phone call. But I hope everybody has an amazing day. If you have HBO, check out Quiet on Set. It's disturbing. You might not want to binge watch it. And I remember Dan Schneider from Head of the Class. And it's not shocking at all to me that he ran a very questionable set and that he was cruel and mean. And I mean, there was just something, you know, when you're always the butt of fat jokes, you could be smiling, but that shit bothers you. It really does. You could just tell. So anyway, I'm not surprised at all that this guy turned into some sort of monster. And you know, guys that look like that, they all look like that. You never hear like Denzel Washington is a monster. You know what I mean? Like, he was fine. Women loved Denzel. So there was never, or Denzel, as he says, there was never any, reason to be, you know, inappropriate. And Dan Snyder ran a very disgusting writer's room, and he was very, very not great to the women on his staff. He's just not a good guy. So he set the tone for a lot of what happened at Nickelodeon. So check it out. Thank you for listening. Keep praying for us. And like I said, get a plan together. Home health seems to be the best way to go. You just need as many bodies as you possibly can get to do shifts. That makes sense. All right. Take care of yourselves. Be well.